Way back in the middle of the last century, my parents, Bill and Arlene Llewellyn, bought a rickety old beach house about a mile west of Redondo, Washington, in what was then unincorporated King County. They bought it for $13,000, waterfront property. And it was that cheap because at the time the neighborhood was considered undesirable. It was mostly summer rentals and year-round hippies and a few people who were really just a step above sort of squatter status. But, you know, these things change. In 1970, my dad died when I was 5 years old. So my mom then became the single mother of five kids in order, my brothers Bill, Dave, Dan, my sister Jan, and me, and whatever dad we happened to have at the time. Also in 1970, waterfront housing became desirable, and the housing rates just went up through the roof. And one by one, we watched beach cabins around us start to get torn down and replaced by these just sprawling homes of wealthy businessmen and their wives. When I was about 12 years old, if I think back of who our neighbors were, we had two owners of big car dealerships, Coram Ford and Scarf Ford. We had the owner of the Elvin's department store chain. We had the chief administrator of Highline Hospital. We had the head of a major construction company. And then a single mom, five kids, living in a house that was so rickety and drafty that our toilets would often freeze over in the wintertime. True story. We'd pee through the ice. It was kind of fun. But one of the people who moved in was the head of this construction company, whose name was generically Mr. Johnson, and his wife, Mrs. Johnson. Mrs. Johnson particularly she was a large woman. She had jet black hair that was probably dyed. She always smelled like makeup. And she had a huge butt. And you'd see her, we'd see her coming down the street and we'd say, "Oh, hey, look, there's Mrs. Johnson. Oh, who's that with her?" "Oh, never mind. It's just her butt." So anyway, five houses away from us, Mr. Johnson built his wife this Mediterranean-style sort of fortress. It was a stucco house with a, you know, red tile roof, huge concrete wall all the way around the edge of their property. Inside the courtyard was this long, narrow outside entryway that was like a long hallway that led up to their front doors. And it was that entryway was covered, and it was about 20 feet long. It was just like a long exterior hallway. And she had two little Pomeranians that she'd keep in there so that they could go outside when it was raining, and they would bark like crazy at the slightest noise. But the house had this very kind of fortressy feel to it. And Mrs. Johnson she had sort of expectations, you could tell when she moved into the neighborhood, that our neighborhood, you know, at least our family, didn't quite reach. She had a daughter whose name was Lisa, who we almost never saw because Lisa was always at ballet classes or writing lessons. She had a husband who, even though he was the head of this successful construction company, he generally drove around in this beat-up old pickup truck, and he wore carpenter pants and dirty T-shirts, and Mrs. Johnson just generally frowned at him a lot. My mom was less of a frowner. She was more of sort of a weary smiler. You know, as the mother of five kids, she's sort of generally a happy person, but during our teenage years, it was kind of a sort of a thing. And but she was a farm girl, right? She was raised on a dairy farm, and she, very, you know, church-going woman, she had a very kind of conservative view on life. In fact, she wouldn't let us watch Bewitched because she was sure it was of the devil. But she didn't really mind if we, like, blew up mailboxes or shot each other with BB guns, because she figured kids are supposed to run a little wild. And besides, she worked all day, so she didn't really have time to watch her every move. And luckily for her, Mrs. Johnson did have time. And so Mrs. Johnson would watch our every move. And it drove my mom crazy, because whenever she saw Mrs. Johnson walking towards our front door, she knew it was going to be to complain about something. One of my favorite traditions every year, in January, after having a Christmas tree in our house next to our wood stove for 30 days, and it was dry as, you know, just dry as tinder, I'd haul it down to the beach and burn it every year. So this one year, when I was about 12 years old, I took it down to the beach, put it on the sand where it's safe, took a bunch of crumpled balls of newspaper and stuck them between all the branches, took about a half a gallon of gasoline from the lawnmower gas, poured it over the whole thing, and then stood back 20 feet, lit a ball of newspaper on fire, threw it in the general direction of the tree. And it just made this awesome noise, just sort of this boom, that was like, it was sensual, the way it kind of hit my chest. And two of the neighbors came out, Mr. Christensen and Mr. Anderson came out on their decks. And I just remember this so distinctly, one of the proudest moments of my life. Mr. Christensen says, "What was that?" And Mr. Anderson, I'm sorry, says, "Oh, it's just that Llewellyn boy again." And it was just like, so it was just this moment of bliss, right? But then later on that day, Mrs. Johnson comes marching down to our house to lecture my mother again, makes me come to the front door and join my mom at the front door so she can lecture my mom's child in front of my mom about the dangers of, you know, this activity. And then she leaves, and I just remember saying to my mom, "Well, of course it was dangerous. I mean, that was the point." Mrs. Johnson accomplished what she wanted to that day, which, you know, was kind of taking the joy out of my life. But it had this side benefit of something kind of snapped in my head that day, and I just made the realization that Mrs. Johnson and I were enemies. And it firmed up in my mind that I was the native in this situation, right? I was there first. I was born in this neighborhood. She was the invader. So I was going to fight this. Unfortunately, she was an adult. I was a kid, so she had power and I was powerless. So I implemented sort of, you know, one of the, I think it's chapter 6, paragraph 4 of Sun Tzu's The Art of War, which is, if your enemy is at rest, you may harass him. Or in this case, it was her. And so I decided to implement this campaign of harassment. And my primary tools of harassment were the Thunder Bomb firecrackers and Mrs. Johnson's two Pomeranian dogs. The dogs always hung out inside the wall of Mrs. Johnson's fortress. So what I would do is I would sneak over there during the day with my disposable Bic lighter and a pocket full of Thunder Bombs. I would just light them and just toss them like grenades over her wall. And they would, every time one would go out, the dogs would just go crazy and they'd run inside her little outside entryway and they'd just bark like crazy until she would have to come out and yell at them. And then they'd calm down and I'd wait for her to go back inside and then I would just toss another one over the wall. I mean, it was totally working. But like every war, there's always collateral damage. And in this case, the collateral damage was my own beloved dog with this black mutt we had named Cinder. So I was in my own yard playing with army men. Remember the green plastic army men? In this day, Mrs. Johnson's part was played by the army man with the brick-sized radio. And so my play was sort of like this. "Look out, Mrs. Johnson! Don't go over by that thunder bomb! Oh, your arm's been blown off!" But unfortunately, the sound made my dog go crazy. And so all of a sudden, my mom comes out and says, "You need to go get your dog from Mrs. Johnson's house. Our dog has run down there." So I go down there, and the dog is cowering and barking in her little outdoor hall-shaped entryway. So I'm like, "Come on, Cinder." And I drag her back home. I'm not smart enough to put her back inside. And I go back about my business, lighting more firecrackers. 10 minutes later, mom says, "You got to go get the dog again." So I go down there. And this time, I'm down there, but Mr. Christensen's German Shepherd is also in the entryway, cowering and barking. Little thought goes off in my mind. Go back home. About a week later, my brother Dan, who also loved fireworks, had been lighting off some leftover cherry bombs, leftover from the 4th of July. Mom sends me down again to get our dog from Mrs. Johnson's, and I go down there. There's four dogs cowering and barking in her outside entryway, and I take our dog home, and I'm walking back, and this theory forms in my mind that Mr. Johnson has done something unintentional. He's unintentionally created this sort of acoustic safety zone that the neighborhood dogs have somehow figured out. So when there's noise in the neighborhood, the dogs have started to pass the secret around that they can go and be safe if they go into Mrs. Johnson's outside entryway. And I'm like, oh, this could be a great tool in my campaign of harassment. But it's only a theory at that point, so I have to find out if it's true. So I go into my closet in my bedroom where I stash my fireworks, my firecrackers, and I realize I have an entire brick unopened of Thunder Bombs. A brick is 2,000 firecrackers. Back then at the time, 2,000 firecrackers we bought ours at the Muckleshoot Indian Reservation, was $40. And my lawn mowing earned me $2 an hour. So that was 20 hours worth of firecrackers that I was going to try out. So I asked my sister Jan and my brother Dan to join me in this. They're older than me, but they're like, "Yeah, okay, we'll come along, see what our screwy kid brother wants to do." So we went out after dinner. This was in the fall, so it was just getting dark, kind of like it is now. And we laid out 2,000 fireworks in a line on the street, 292nd Street, about halfway between our house and the Johnson's house. So we light one end with my disposable Bic lighter, and we just run back into the house, close the door, and then just this incredible sort of symphony of firecrackers goes off for about a minute straight. My mom is in the kitchen doing the dishes, again with a weary smile on her face, and she turns and she's like, "What is that racket out there?" I'm like, "It's firecrackers," and she's like, "Oh, do you have to do it at this time of the day?" And then she goes, is the dumb dog at least inside the house? And I was like, "No, I think the dog's outside." And she goes, "Well, can you go get him then? Because you know Mrs. Johnson's going to call in a minute." And I was like, Mom, can we just wait a minute? I have to see if my experiment works." And she's turning to me with this look on her face of like, "What?" When the phone rings. And she picks it up and answers it, and she says hello, and then she just kind of holds the phone away from her head and stares at me sideways out of her eye. And then she holds it like that for about 20 seconds, and then she just hangs up the phone. And I was like, "Who was that?" And she goes, "I think it was Mrs. Johnson, but all I could hear were dogs barking." So I just like let out this woohoo! And I run out the front door of our house with my brother Dan and my sister Jan, and they were following after me, and we're running down the street. And as soon as we like get into our yard, you can hear the dogs, but they're not nearby, but you can hear this distant barking of dogs. And we're running through the street, and it's this kind of glorious slow motion Steven Spielberg moment, because there's just this massive kind of sulfurous smoke, paper all over the floor that we're kicking through with our feet. And we run down, and I turn into Mrs. Johnson's, you know, walled-in courtyard and into her entryway, and it is jammed with dogs. There is, Cinder is way up there at the front next to the black carved double doors, and Mr. Christensen's old German Shepherd is there, the Anderson's Golden Retriever, the two Pomeranians, and like a dozen dogs I have never seen before in my life. And they are literally jammed up against their house, just barking like crazy. So I'm like wading through the tails and the paws and the noses up to get our dog, and I'm like reaching for Cinder, and the doors crack open. And Mrs. Johnson's face is there in this kind of crazed look, and she's looking out. She's afraid and angry at the same time, and her nostrils are flaring, and there's these little bits of foam at the corner of her mouth. And she's yelling something at me that I can't hear to save my life, because all I can hear is just this massive barking of dogs. So I grab Cinder by the collar, and I drag her back out through the dogs, and I walk home, and it's just this moment of intense triumph. And if it was a movie, the story would end there and the credits would roll as I'm walking home through the smoke. But what happened in real life is I kept doing this for about 3 more years. And in the summertime, it would be firecrackers, and in the fall, it would be plums, and at Halloween, it would be eggs against her house. And this went on for about 3 years until you grow out of what I like to think of as the age of torment. But here's the thing that really kind of got me when I was remembering the story is that Mrs. Johnson won, because she lived in that house the rest of her life. She passed it on when she died to her daughter, Lisa, who still lives there today. My mom had to move out because the housing prices went up so high. Her annual taxes, long time ago, ended up being more than she paid in full for her house. So she got gentrified out. I look back on the story, and of course I realized Mrs. Johnson wasn't an evil woman, but she wasn't nice. And she knew exactly the situation that my family was in. Mr. Hansen and Mrs. Thompson and Mr. Smith, these people were like surrogate parents to me. And I'm sure they complained about us to my mom every now and then, but they had way more kind words than complaints. So can I justify my actions toward Mrs. Johnson? Yeah. I figure out how to sleep with myself this way, is that we were both mean to each other, but she was a grown-up and I was just a kid, and at least my actions had style. Hers were so boring. I mean, come on, lady, put a little effort into it. Thank you.